Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hey everyone, it's Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm very excited about today's podcast. I speak to Jason Mayhem Miller. It has been almost 8 years since I spoke to him, and I'll be honest, I didn't think I'd ever speak to him again. And so it was really nice to connect with him again and to reunite, if you will, and I'm hoping that you all enjoy the conversation as well. Before we get to the actual interview, let me tell you about our good friends over at ZipRecruiter. As you know, right now, we all know how easy it can be to get overwhelmed. We've got a lot going on, but to keep ourselves busy, we have to work. We must work to keep our loved ones safe and to protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, and to stay focused. And we have to work to inspire, to innovate, and to build new solutions. But for all this to actually work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day. But today is different. We are partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries to make sure we are finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together by going to ZipRecruiter.com/work together. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/work together. And speaking of working together, there aren't many greater examples of that than the 1990s Chicago Bulls, which is why I loved watching The Last Dance this past weekend. You know, the 10-part documentary series about MJ and those famous Bulls. Well, the next two episodes come out this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. I can't wait, and I want to let you all know that immediately following the broadcast, you can check out the wrap-up show hosted by my pals Jalen Rose and David Jacoby, which is presented by State Farm and AT&T. It's Jalen and Jacoby, the after show, featuring another good friend of mine, director Jason Hare, available wherever you get your podcasts. And also, one last quick word before we get to Mayhem Miller. Today's episode contains language that may not be suitable for all audiences, so listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to another episode of the program. And as always, we are presented by our good friends over at Modelo. Modelo Espacial, brewed for those with a fighting spirit. So as I said at the top, I'm really excited about today. It has been a long time, 7.5 years to be exact, since I last spoke to the great Jason Mayhem Miller, an OG of the fight game, a guy who has been around this sport for a very long time. But the reason I haven't talked to him in almost 8 years is because for the past almost decade or so, he has been in and out of jail. He has had a litany of issues with the police in Southern California, legal issues, arrests. It has not been a good time for him. But recently, I noticed that he seemed to be turning the corner, that he seemed to be returning to the old Jason Miller, who we all loved back when he was in his prime around 10, 11 years ago. And I thought that maybe this would be a good time to reconnect with him, because back when I started my MMA career, he was one of those guys that I spoke to a lot. He was one of my favorite interviews. Colorful, fun, eccentric. I mean, he was just a lot of fun and one of the few guys who actually was able to become a star outside of the UFC. He eventually made it to the UFC, but he really was a special talent. And, you know, we're all searching for nice ways to reconnect and to talk about the past and be nostalgic. And with a break in the action right now, I thought this was the perfect time. And I'm really happy that we got to do it, and I think that you will enjoy it. Before we get to the actual conversation, though, I can understand that some of you may not be familiar with Jason Miller and what he's been through over the past 10 years or so. People like TST out there who just started watching mixed martial arts. So here's a quick primer on who this man is. He made his MMA debut in 1998. He started his career perfect 5-0. His first loss came in 2002 to a young man named Chael Sonnen, pre-bad guy Chael Sonnen. He won his first major title in 2004 when he won the Super Brawl welterweight title in Hawaii. He made his UFC debut in 2005 when he fought and lost to the great George St. Pierre before he became a champion. He lost that fight via unanimous decision. He left the UFC after that GSP fight, but that's really when his career flourished. He had big fights against the likes of Robbie Lawler, Frank Trigg, and Tim Kennedy. He won the Icon Sport title in Hawaii, Again, he had a solid run in the Japanese-based Dream organization before signing with Strikeforce in 2009. And that's when he really rose to prominence, because in 2009, he also began hosting a popular MTV show called Bully Beatdown, where he challenged bullies to fight pro fighters. That show lasted 3 seasons and really turned him into a big star in and out of the sport of MMA. He ended up fighting Jake Shields for the vacant Strikeforce middleweight title in November of 2009 and almost won that fight via submission. He ended up losing, though, via decision in the end. Perhaps his highest profile win came in September of 2010 when he defeated Japanese legend Kazushi Sakuraba via submission at Dream 16. He returned to the UFC in 2011 when he signed to be a coach opposite Michael Bisping for the 14th season of The Ultimate Fighter. He lost to Bisping in the finale in December of that year in what ended up being the final live UFC main event broadcast on Spike TV. His next and last UFC fight was in May of 2012 at UFC 146. Prior to the fight, he actually said he'd retire if he lost to CB Dalloway. He did in fact lose and was released from the UFC. And that's when life really started to change for Jason Miller. He first found himself in legal trouble in August of 2012 when he was arrested after authorities found him naked inside a church in Orange County, California. The vandalism charge against him was later dismissed. In October of 2012, he was on my show, The MMA Hour. He was there to promote a film that he was a part of called Here Comes the Boom. It's an interview that a lot of people have asked me about since then. It was a wild and somewhat frightening interview. Here's a quick clip from that exchange.
There are some people who feel like the film Here Comes the Boom is a little too, you know, comedy.
I know what you're talking about. I read the internet.
Yeah. So what can you say to those people? Why should they go out and watch this?
Don't go watch it.
Oh, okay.
We don't want you.
Not only internet.
There's
people.
Porno also.
Right.
Not just Arius
Have you seen
Arius Hawani?
Have you seen my show before?
I did my research.
Okay. Do you like it?
I think you're a whore.
That's not very nice.
No, I just mean, you know, it's good. Well, the world is full of pimps and hoes. I'm just talking about the ones I know.
What? So I booked Mayhem on this show from like 1 to 2.
I'm sorry.
Lucky Patrick is
Yo,
great.
Yo, there's like a WAP parade going down the middle of the street. Maybe he's stuck in traffic.
Maybe I could get Lucky Patrick from like 1 to 120 and then Mayhem can come on. What do you think?
Huh?
There's a lot.
Listen, what are you negotiating?
Yeah.
Hey, man, listen. On my set, when I was directing Here Comes the Boom, which comes out October 12th, when I was on it, man, we had it all worked out beforehand. So what are you doing?
What do you mean?
Look, there's shit breaking, fucking.
No. He's
weird shit.
The producer's coming out to fix the camera, I think, because you moved a little too much.
So what?
You've been on radio before. No.
Yeah, I've been on radio, not with a bunch of lumpini cameras. Is that thing on?
It is, actually.
That one's not working. There's no light.
Ma'am, come on.
There's
come
no
on.
Light.
Let's keep... Ma'am.
Is my face on the screen?
Ma'am. Come on, man. Let's be real. Let's talk. You came all the way here.
What?
You came all the way here.
Look, if you want fucking Mayhem, look. You're going to have to, like, you know, schedule with him.
What do you mean? I did schedule with him.
He's here all the time. That's all I'm saying.
So let's talk. What's going on, man?
Look, I had about enough of this. Are you fucking done?
Done what?
You gonna fucking talk to
ma'am,
me?
I have to be honest with you. I
want
to be honest with you. Ma'am, you know, man.
Yo, bro, I'm fucking sick of it. Yo, okay. You know what? You guys fucking have your fucking stupid internet radio show in your mom's basement.
That's it? You're gonna do this?
You fucking not, saw what I'm doing.
Ma'am, this is not
Andy
Kaufman and.
Stop calling me, man!
Okay.
What? You made a show by yourself.
Man, we've been through a lot. I'm concerned for you. I want to talk to you, man.
Yo, call Mayhem with your fucking crybaby story. Yo, Lucky Patrick.
This is not enjoyable, man.
Hey.
This is not enjoyable. This is not...
All right, I'm sorry you're hurt. Your feelings are
not,
hurt.
Come back, ma'am. Come back, man.
Hey, I'm telling you right now.
This is not David Letterman show. This is just us Ma'am, come on, man.
Fuck off.
A week later, I caught up with Jason Miller in Central Park to talk about that, and here's how that interview started.
I understand we're starting an interview now with Jason Miller.
Yes. So is that okay with you?
Can we officially laugh at Patrick?
I'm not sure. Can we?
I got you!
Did you?
I Did I? I don't know. Look at YouTube. Did I get you or did I not?
There's so much that I want to ask you about.
And I know you're bursting at the seams. I can feel it.
I wanted to talk to you before all of that.
Well, absolutely. But I'm here.
And now you've given me a whole lot more things to talk about. And I actually want to start backwards. Usually you want to start, you know, chronological order. But what was that? Seriously, what was that?
Look, I understand that you have a narrow view of me, the same as everyone on the internet.
Do you really think I do?
In a way. And here's why. I don't go by opinion, I just go on facts. And the fact is, during that interview, you could not accept me as an actor. And I was in character, and I wasn't breaking. Lucky Patrick would tell you, fuck off. Jason Miller loves you.
To be honest, after that conversation, I wasn't all that convinced that he was just playing a character, that he was okay. I was happy we were able to bury the hatchet, so to speak. But that's the last time before today that I had a conversation with Jason Mayhem Miller. In October of 2014, Miller barricaded himself inside his California home for more than 4 hours after sheriff's deputies arrived to arrest him on a warrant related to domestic violence allegations lodged by an ex-girlfriend. He live tweeted the standoff. In March of 2015, he kicked a police officer and spit at another cop at a restaurant in Laguna Beach. In October of 2015, he threw a ceramic tile at deputies and threatened them with a large fire extinguisher. He had to be subdued with a taser. In January of 2016, he spray painted graffiti on a wall of a tattoo parlor. That same month, he cranked up the volume of a stereo in the same tattoo parlor, blowing out their speakers. In July of 2016, he got into an argument with two women, one of whom slapped him in Costa Mesa. And he was heavily intoxicated at the time, according to police. And he also grabbed the woman who slapped him by the leg, was detained by a security guard until police arrived. He returned to fighting in May of 2016 to fight for the Italian-based Venator FC. However, he missed weight by 24 pounds for a middleweight title fight against former UFC fighter Luke Barnett. So he then fought someone else named Mattia Schiavellin. And on the card, he was submitted in the second round via rear naked choke. He has not fought since. He fought that 2014 domestic violence allegation and was acquitted by a jury in February of 2017 of beating up the former girlfriend, but other charges involving his conflicts with the law were set aside at the time for a separate trial. He then pleaded guilty to beating his girlfriend in September of 2017. He was sentenced in November of 2017 to 124 days in jail and released with credit for time served, according to court records. He was arrested again in January of 2018 when he was found to be in possession of a bulletproof vest and various other weapons such as nunchucks, knives, a machete, an axe, a samurai sword, a replica assault weapon. According to the probation officer's report, police also found human growth hormone and various other performance-enhancing drugs apparently obtained without a prescription. In October of 2018, he was arrested for smashing a large marble table at his girlfriend's residence and violating a protective order to stay away from her. According to court records, he was also accused of removing doors from the home and derailing the garage door. In July of 2019, Miller pleaded guilty to a felony count of vandalism and a misdemeanor count of violating a protective stay away order. He was sentenced to a year in jail, but was credited with time served. He was later released. In September of 2019, he appeared on social media for the very first time in over 2 years. And among the many things that he wrote was an apology to everyone that he had affected during what he called a very dark time. And he also asked people to reserve judgment on him until he's able to prove that he is a changed man. So here we are several months later talking to Jason Mayhem Miller once again to find out if he has changed and to find out what happened over the last 8 years or so. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I want to thank him. And also I want to thank someone on Twitter named JoeDaddy85 who has been pushing me to talk to Mayhem for the last few months. I appreciate both JoeDaddy and Mayhem for the effort and for, of course, Mayhem for talking to us today. It was great to catch up with him, and I hope you enjoy it.
Did you know that it had been almost 8 years since we last did an interview?
Bro, how do you know that? Facebook memories? I did not count the days down, but I figured we'd always see each other once again, you know, even if it is through a quarantine Skype call or, you know, glorified one with a better business model. You know, it's nice to see you. 8 years is a long time, but, you know, time flies when you're having fun or when you're doing other stuff.
Yes, a lot has happened in those 8 years. But I will say, during this quarantine and with everything on hiatus, I've been trying to talk to people and reconnect with people and just try to, you know, do different kind of stuff than the day-to-day MMA grind. Last week, connecting with George St. Pierre was a lot of fun. But talking to you has been something that I've wanted to do for quite some time. And a lot of fans have asked me, hey, why don't you connect with Jason again? And obviously the stars didn't align and it just didn't seem like
It took was a global pandemic to shut the whole world down. And then Ariel and Mayhem are friends again. Woohoo!
You see, this is one of the positive byproducts.
Bro, drawing us together as Americans. It really should.
Okay, so just curious, where do you live now?
Oh, I'm in Orange County, California. Parts unknown, of course.
Yep.
Irvine.
Yep. Irvine, okay.
Yeah, and, it's like, you know, the richest, safest city in the entire country. So, I mean, no big deal.
And what do you do? Like, what's your day-to-day life look
the
like?
The craziest thing about this pandemic is the uptick in my mayhemmartialarts.com traffic and the just students that I have now that are the same way that we're talking right now, except instead of these gamer headphones and, you know, Spider-Man posters, it's like a heavy bag and like sweaty clothes in the corner. And I tell the guy to give me a switch left kick, you know, and then top over and give me a right and then a left hook. And, you know, we do that for about an hour. And these beasts, these quarantine beasts will be released because they're just becoming something. Even though it's just this two-way mirror that I'm speaking through, I can mold some martial artists via the internet. I mean, that's what I've been doing the whole time, but now I've just distilled it down into its like purest form. And so mayhemmartialarts.com is doing pretty good in the quarantine times. I'm glad that I'm giving some young fighters like an outlet and a goal to work towards while now everything's shut down.
So you have your own MMA team. Do you have an actual physical gym as well?
I do. I don't have the physical gym for the right reason, because my group is international. I got guys in Thailand. I got guys in Poland. I got guys in Japan, you know, and I got plenty of them right here in the United States, like good old US of A, tough, like half Mexican kid. You know, I got like heavyweight coming in, when the quarantine ends. Like, it's one of those things like where you're forced to adapt. And I don't think many people are really good at adapting, but I've done that my whole life. I started my MMA career as like a jiu-jitsu dude that kind of was like slugger type high school wrestling kind of mix. And then, you know, by the end of my career, I was like a Muay Thai kickboxer sort of guy where, you know, using my clinch to put knees and throw kicks. So you always have to adapt and evolve. And I feel like you're doing it. I feel like your producers are doing it. I feel like there's a lot of people that during this, which admittedly terrible, it's a terrible time for everybody, but I feel like there's a big glimmer of hope at the end of the tunnel and we're all running there.
Mm-hmm. And so as far as, okay, so you've got, that's what you're doing. That's your day job, so to speak. You're still heavily involved in MMA. Any pending legal issues or is that all behind you?
No. Look, I left that life behind. I went like full gangster for a while and didn't serve me. And, it didn't serve me well. So, you know, I made the adjustment. I adapted. I changed. I like found healthier ways to, you know, because when I had to stop fighting, then that was like a giant hole. You know, I had the injury and then suddenly there was this void. And I heard about it all the time from guys. I didn't believe it. But it happened. And, you know, I went to a dark place. Now, not me and John Law get along for the most part. Like we're just friendly acquaintances these days. Not bitter enemies.
Who's John Law, you say?
Yeah. No, I wasn't talking about my next opponent, Darryl.
No.
I know you're used to jumping on a, you know, you're going to make this fight? You're going to make this match happen? I'm thinking about it. I already have a fight island. It's just true. My friends in Thailand have a place called Koh Phi Phi. You may have known it from where, like, Leonardo DiCaprio shot some famous movie. And it's just a beautiful... Oh, man. Look, when quarantine shuts down, Arahuani, I got to get you out to Koh Phi Phi. is beautiful.
Okay. You know, it's amazing now that, you know, I've been doing this now covering MMA professionally for 14 years. I've noticed, especially in the last couple of years, that unfortunately, for whatever reason, and I don't know if there's a good reason as to why this is, but I certainly think that this is a thing. The newer fans, the fans of today, don't know about the greats of yesteryear. You talk to the legends, Chuck Liddell, Vitor Belfort, and they don't know who these people are. And I would put you in that category as well. You're one of the legends of the sport. Your career started in 1998. I'm going to give a bit of a, like a history lesson here, a very quick one. I don't want to diminish your accomplishments, but just for those that don't know.
Reading them off a list sounds a little weird, but you know what? You're Ariel Helwani.
I'm not reading anything right now. I'm looking straight into my phone.
Straight off the dome.
Yeah, 1998, you started your career. You started 5-0. Your first professional loss was against a young man named Chael Sonnen. Could you believe that?
I just didn't know how to wrestle. Like, that's the thing. I was like, knew some Muay Thai, and this guy just double-legged me into infinity. Like, I just was like, all right. And I just kept getting taken down and just kept getting back up and going, all right, I'm going to kick his head off this time. All right, now I'm going to triangle choke him. All right, now I'm going to – and then the time ran out, and I had him in the craziest, like, Eddie Bravo, like, shin choke across his neck. And I asked him about it. And he told me, yeah, you were close. Cause he was gurgling, you know, it was an amazing fight. Like those fights in my young days. Oh my goodness. You know, and I had never ran into a guy with awesome wrestling like Chael Sonnen. Like I had only run into like, you know, like high school wrestler type dude who knew some jiu-jitsu or maybe he's doing old school karate. Even back then we had guys who just come straight out of karate. Like learn to wrestle for 45 minutes and then go fight. And they were like hard kickers, hard punchers, but you just had to like learn to avoid it and hit a single leg, you know, hit a double. And, or if you get, end up on the bottom, hit him with the triangle choke. And that was the magic recipe. But, you know, as you progress in the game, you'll run into an expert wrestler who maybe doesn't have much kickboxing as you, but like can do a takedown over and over and over again. And, that was a crazy, wake up call to a young Jason Miller, not yet Mayhem.
Right. And, the UFC is founded in 93. So you're talking about a guy who started in 98. I mean, you're there on the ground floor, despite the loss, you're rolling, you end up at Super Brawl in Hawaii. You win the welterweight title there. Now you're becoming one of the big names in the sport. You make it to the UFC. And at the time, you only have one fight in the UFC against a young man named George St. Pierre. You lose that fight via decision, but you don't stick around for another fight. Why was it only one fight? I don't know if I've ever asked you this.
This is like boiled down to like money and respect, mostly respect. Like the money to be made overseas was considerable at the time, like very appealing, you know, for a young guy. And I had just got done making that weight, which is like the hardest thing I ever done. And I figured, you know, hey, they're going to give me a title shot in Super Brawl, which at the time was like the hot organization because TV wasn't really a factor. So there was like this crazy cult of internet before YouTube, like trading tapes of Super Brawl. And that was like the hardcore MMA fan in those days, you know, Reddit group, you know, these guys were just, do that. And so to me, the allure of going to a beautiful island, right? Fighting at a comfortable weight after I won the welterweight title and the communication between the promoter, myself and the management, all that like created a perfect storm for me to head, you know, west and eventually to Japan.
Mm. So you go back to Hawaii after that, you win the Icon Sport title. You have great fights against the likes of Robbie Lawler. You beat him, Frank Trigg. You start dabbling in Japan. You also fight Tim Kennedy at HGNet Fights.
I fought him twice. I feel yes, maybe three times. I feel like I fight him all the time. I feel like I'm still fighting him because my dad always sends me his tweets.
For me, though,
those army guys stick together. I'm telling you,
that's right. It all changes for you, in my opinion, in 2009. That's when Mayhem really starts to become a big name, because you signed with Strikeforce, but you also start hosting Bully Beatdown on MTV. That last three seasons, very popular show where you get bullies to fight professional fighters in cage matches. It was really fun stuff. And you fight for the vacant middleweight title against Jake Shields. You almost beat him. You almost submitted him on CBS. That was so close.
Close,
right?
Don't count. Close don't count.
15 seconds more, and you're the middleweight champion of Strikeforce, right?
You know, it's funny because, like, my losses get brought up, you know, and the reality is, yeah, I lost, but, like, to the best dudes in the world, like, the strongest grappler in the world, you know, like, my loss, and, like, what? Eked out a decision, right? Like, it's like, it's the same thing I coach the guys with, and a lot of people just have it naturally, but I think you can also build it, like a mentality that you're always like just one move away from winning. And if you can keep that positivity going, then eventually you win, you know? And, I had a lot of great wins in my career, and, it's because I learned so much from every loss.
And so you have a nice run in Strikeforce. Like I said, also in Japan as well, Dream, the Jacare fights. Ooh, I mean, man. I can't stress this enough. When you were in your prime, 2009, 2010, 2011, the walkouts, the interviews, the persona, the hair, the MTV show. You're one of the guys that made me fall in love with MMA to the point where I want to cover this sport.
You know, we're on the cusp, though, Errol, like, of a different revolution. Like, there's, like, a new thing kind of happening
I want to stick with 2009, and we'll get to what's happening now. We'll get – because you were on fire, despite wins and losses here and there. And I remember first running into you in Las Vegas prior to UFC 98, I was not credentialed, but I saw Mayhem Miller of Dream walking down, going to the UFC 98 weigh-ins, which are infamous because Tito Ortiz came out wearing the t-shirt about Dana White, and I asked him, who are you fighting next in Dream? And you're like, where's your press pass? What do you want, the Scoop? Scoop McGillicuddy? You remember that?
I like hearing you say Scoop McGillicuddy. It was something great about it. Yeah.
Because well, I
remember that, like, vividly, Ariel Helwani, because I told you, because I had already tried to, like, produce television from the inside of those casinos, and no. And I was cracking up because I was like, look at this bold, aggressive young journalism student. You know, like, he's just coming right up to me and talking to me, you know, cause like back then, like, I don't know, man. Yeah. In my prime. Oh my goodness. I was just an animal. Like I didn't care what anyone had to say. Really. I would really listen to people, and you know, I still don't.
You get back to the UFC in 2011. You signed to coach.
Now, that was a weird deal because of the television expertise. Yeah, the UFC wanted me back over there to help them with the Ultimate Fighter. Yes. Yep. And so we did 14. That, and it was great. Yeah, and I fucking lost the bad one, Bisping, at the end of that season. But I, like, won, pretty much in my head, I won my ability to be a real coach award. You know, I was like, oh, my God, I can do this. Like, I thought it would be hard because – I was so bad at waiting tables when I was a kid. Like, I tried one time and I was and you think it'd be like that, but it's completely different because each fighter has his own needs and you cannot, you know, you can focus and tailor that to, like, create a beautiful work of art. You know, this guy can now do a high kick that well and, like, you know, step back and defend a takedown. Like, he didn't know any of this just a little while ago. And now he's busting moves. It's very fulfilling.
And so that's an entertaining season. In fact, your main event fight against Michael Bisping is on Spike TV. It airs on Spike TV. In fact, it's the last main event ever, live main event ever to air on Spike TV because then they moved over to Fox. Unfortunately, and it got 3 million viewers, which is absurd for cable television. Then we move over to the Fox, and you get one more fight in the UFC, UFC 146 against CB Dalloway. Prior to that fight, you said if you lose to CB, you will retire. And after the fight, you lose. Dana White says that he has released you because of a confrontation with Burt Watson in the back.
Nah. Well, yeah, I didn't do what Burt said. Yeah, that's for sure. If you want to call that a confrontation. But right before my entrance, Burt, like, stops me and tells me that my mask doesn't look right. And then I got to take it off. And I said, why are you hassling me right now, Burt Watson? And then I realized because somebody's in his ear, buzzing him. The man was telling him what to do.
Burt Watson, for those that don't know, was the man who ran the backstage area for the UFC, very instrumental in those days. And I remember
now,
talking
to
you.
Now, does he do Bellator now? Because, I mean, this guy is a very – he doesn't any
– No, he does CFFC, and he has his own small promotion, but he never rebounded with a big promotion.
Well, I just feel like he's a very strong talent. Like, it's a very specific talent that you have to do Burt Watson's yelling in the back job. You know, you have to have like a booming voice, very like friendly demeanor, you know, and like because you're in there with like the toughest dudes in the world, maybe the meanest, some of them. So it takes a real like showman like Burt Watson to control the backstage like that.
So no hard feelings towards him?
No, not at all, no.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. I remember a couple days after that fight, you came on my show. At the time, it was called the MMA Hour, and you were very somber, and you said that you were going to retire. And it was really around then, now we're talking about the summer of 2012, where I feel like things started to change for you. You started to go down a different kind of path, and you just alluded to that, you know, with the career being over, you know, you don't know what to do. And that was the first time that you kind of found yourself in legal trouble, right? You were found in that church.
Well, it's one of those weird things where, like, you know, I'd like spent my life being a monk and, you know, cutting weight and getting ready to fight. Spent all my 20s. While all the regular people were like going to college and experimenting. And yeah, I went to college real late.
Mm-hmm. What happened that day in the church?
You know, I was delirious, to be honest. Like, I didn't sleep for days. And then I just woke up in what I thought was my house, wasn't my house. And I get plastered all over the damn headlines. You know what I'm saying? Naked in the church. Oh, brutal, brutal. But it's like 10 years ago, it feels like, maybe 100. I've changed so drastically since that time. But I was living a life where I just took the governor off, just like full on, like, try to see what kind of crazy stories that I could get into all the time. And look, we all want to have like amazing, crazy stories in our life, at least a couple, but I just was collecting them day by day, by day, by day, and just nothing was fun to me. So I just kept pushing harder to have more fun. And I advise against it. I advise against it. You know, there's a balance in life. And I guess it just took a lot of those problems to set me back balance.
When you say you were delirious, that you didn't sleep, why? Like, what were you doing?
I ran for 28 miles. I was sad. I never trained for a marathon, but I figured I could do it. And my body was in good shape at the time, so I just did it. Another big mistake. But, you know, I felt like I had to do it. Felt like I put my mind on something. I can truck this, you know, nearly 30 miles. I could do it. I could run this down PCH.
Why were you sad?
Sad? Oh, man, I was injured. The insurance company said they're not going to pay for nothing. I said, all right, well, fine. I got to sell everything in my life. Now what? Because I don't want to go into medical debt for the rest of my life. So, all right, here. What else? You know, my management's gone. My friends are gone. The reality of the situation, you know, like, of course you're going to be sad. It's just a reality of the situation. And, you know, if you walked in my shoes, I guess you'd understand a little bit more, but you know, we're all limited by our own perspectives.
No, I understand. I mean, the story of the fighter who, you know, comes to the realization that the career is over is a story that, you know, is often told, right?
Well, and not just that your career is over, but also that you're, you know, you're on the hook for it. So it's your fault. There you go. But like, wait a minute. I thought we're insured. Nope, we're not. Not for you.
Hmm. So that happens in August. And in October, you're a guest on my show, The MMA Hour, in studio. And
now this is a beautiful performance.
Wait, so for those that don't know, you're a guest to promote the movie, Here Comes the Boom, starring Kevin James. You're a character in the film.
The severely underrated Here Comes the Boom.
Yes, it was a fun film.
Should have a 9.5 on Rotten Tomatoes. No, IMDb, okay? It really should. It should be. I mean, it's better than Mall Cop 1, Mall Cop 2. It's better than the Mall Cop Part 3 that they're probably going to come out with any day now. It's Kevin James' best work, most emotional, and MMA.
It's a fun one. But you
give
you,
me my Oscar.
You're a character, Lucky Patrick, in that film. And in the interview, you're playing Lucky Patrick. And it gets, you know, a little heated, and you throw the camera and you storm
out. You just couldn't understand Lucky Patrick's, like, internal rage. Like, you just couldn't disseminate it. Usually you're so good about being the Barbara Walters of MMA and really getting guys to open up like a flower. But, you know, here's the thing, too, is that Lucky Patrick never really made it as a fighter. You know what I mean? He made it as a tough guy on the streets, you know? So he was just like a, you know, low-level MMA fighter. Maybe that's why you couldn't peel him back like an onion.
But in all honesty, were you 100% okay during that interview?
No, I was not okay. My whole life was in shambles, right? And I didn't want to talk to you. I wanted you to talk to Lucky Patrick, and you did.
Okay. Okay, so that's why you came as the character.
I mean, there's nothing for Jason Miller to talk about.
Right.
What? How's retirement? Get out of here. You know, that's a simple question. That's like day one question. That's not an Errol Hawani level question.
Were you intoxicated?
Not really. Maybe like the days previous, but I try to, like, you know what I mean? Keep it real with you. You know, keep a clear head while I was doing that crazy stunt. Like, I knew it was going to get weird. I didn't know how weird it was going to get. It just, like, got to the next level. But on the way out of your studio, as I stormed out angrily, I gave a wink to, like, the cutest black lady, like, who's in the office over there. And, like, everybody was congregated around because they saw. And I just, like.
They were mortified.
One lady knew that I was just fucking around and not mentally ill. But the rest of you guys, you know, thought otherwise. I understand.
It became huge news. I mean, till this day, people ask me about that interview constantly. I've done thousands of interviews now, and I get asked about the Mayhem Lucky Patrick interview. And then we met up again exactly a week later in Central Park, and we had a long talk. And, you know, that's the last time we spoke prior to today.
That's crazy.
That is wild, right? But here's the thing. Even in that interview where we sort of peeled back the curtain and we talked about the incident, honestly, I didn't feel like you were 100% okay.
I was mad. I was so mad.
Why?
I mean, the aforementioned, you know, failure to pay a medical bill was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I was expressing myself, albeit a somewhat, you know, not helpful to myself way, but I felt like I needed to say something, and I said it. I've always been that way, and, you know, I try to filter out, not fit for consumption television, right? But it's hard. I speak from the heart.
Did you ever get that cleared up, that medical bill?
Yeah, I paid it.
How much was it? Okay.
Well, it depends on who you ask. You know what I'm saying? Somewhere between, what, $250,000 and then, like, probably what it really cost, like, you know, $100,000.
Okay. And right. So we think,
who knows with the insurance company writing the number.
Right. So I remember saying goodbye to you that day, and I remember you were eating a yogurt. I remember a lot of things about that, and, like, it fell on the ground. I'm a germaphobe, so as you can probably imagine, during this pandemic, I'm not exactly in the best of spirits.
You
dropped, like, your fork on the ground, and you picked it up, and you kept eating, and you were not concerned about that. And I was like, I can't believe he's still eating with the same fork.
What do you mean? During the interview, I snatched somebody's water and drank it.
Yes.
A random. Yeah, I was really, like, feeling unafraid of virus and, you know, cold and flu. Like, nah, I felt pretty invincible.
Before we continue with this conversation with Jason Mayhem Miller, I want to quickly pause to tell you about Daniel Cormier's favorite beer, Modelo. We love Modelo over here because they are brewed for those with a fighting spirit. Modelo is the official beer of the UFC and even partners with the likes of UFC double champ Amanda Nunes. She's got the fighting spirit, which means never giving up, even when the odds are against you. Like the world's best fighters, it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters what you're made of. That's why Modelo has been the gold standard since 1925, because Modelo is a crisp Pilsner-style lager that set the standard for authentic Mexican beer. Crisp. Say it with me. Crisp. Modelo uses premium hops to give the golden lager its crisp taste. So, when you're watching the next big UFC fight, make sure you have a crisp Modelo Especial within reach. Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit, drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports in Chicago, Illinois. We love Modelo. Support them because they support us. Now back to Jason Miller.
2013 to 2019, I mean, a lot has changed for you since then. Arrested multiple times. You had the incident in, I believe, 2014 or 15, where you're live tweeting a police standoff for 4 hours. And I don't want to go through every single moment.
No, I mean, we'll be here all day, man. This thing will run over 2 hours. The reality is that I was feuding with the police.
Why? You don't want to talk about it?
I mean, so many reasons. Like, it just became personal. Like, a couple of incidents here and there, and they have so much resources, they can just leave somebody outside a house all the time. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, again, you know, my whole life has been a fight. Like, I'm always, you know, I always need somebody to defeat. And I, you know, I picked them as an opponent. And that was a terrible mistake. And the reality is that you can't do that. You know, but at the time, made sense. I felt like they besmirched me. And I was, you know, challenging authority. Now, I understand now the importance of it, but at the time, I didn't.
You also had multiple domestic violence incidents with the same woman.
Well, I mean, multiple different women. Like, I've done a lot of therapy, and I've taken a lot of classes. And something I've learned is that even though you're not doing anything wrong, you can be the person to incite and escalate, and it doesn't help you in any way. But, you know, if you're, you know, tied to conflict, like you thrive on conflict, you can escalate, you know, these family situations to a point where somebody loses their temper and can't calm down. And then, what do you do in this situation? Well, you know, I've learned that you can only control your actions. So, you know, you remove yourself from the situation, or you, you know, take a time out, you know, like, you got to learn to coexist. And I feel like this is a lesson that everybody's learning right now with COVID, that we all need to, like, be responsible partners and friends. I've learned so much about the dynamics of relationships in the past year that, man, I don't know why I would, you know, I got in trouble for headlocking my sister. Like, why? Why do I have to escalate a tense moment? Why? What is it about me? What is it inside me that makes me want to react to conflict with more conflict? And ever since I've learned that, like, that my default setting is to needle and to, like, have a comeback for everything is juvenile. It's ridiculous. I don't have to do that all the time. You know, I don't have to fall back into my old fighting ways where, oh, you're going to say something about me? I'm coming right back at you. And that right in the Diaz is like this, you know? I just continued that. I carried over that skill into another realm of my life, and it took me, you know, it was part of a larger problem, you know, that I had just about life in general. And, you know, time heals all wounds, I guess, because I feel like the best version of me that I can be.
Hmm. How old are you now?
damn near 40.
When you were involved in those incidents, I would imagine, because I know that a couple of times you were found with drugs and things of that nature, were you heavily under the influence?
I was never found with drugs. As you call marijuana a drug.
Marijuana, opioids?
You know, I did dabble in that, and it really was a catastrophe. I feel all those people with the opioid epidemic. I was delirious when I took that stuff. Just couldn't think straight. Couldn't get it together. You know, like it was just, there's something about my biology where I'll just like, I can keep moving forever, but oh man, like your brain is foggy. You know, you wake up in a cell, like that's the only thing they have for you if you're having a problem like that, you know, and in many places. You know, I would just recommend anybody that like goes into that, like, does it with a wary, wary head, you know, because you can get delirious. It's true.
Were you taking that stuff because your body was in pain because of the fight career?
It was one of those things where, you know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do? They prescribed them because I was damaged. You know, I was hurt. That's the reality of a fighting career, is that if you do it long enough, you know, you're going to end up with some kind of wear and tear. And, and their heart was in the right place, but it just spun me off into a bad one. You know, so I really, my heart goes out to anybody dealing with that or their family dealing with that. It's a real thing. It's a real problem. And I understand why people have problems with them.
I thought what you said about, you know, having an opponent was something that you were so used to, and now the cops were your opponent. What about the idea, like, the music stops, right? There are no more crowds. You were such a popular fighter. Did you miss that, like, getting involved in these incidents, like live tweeting the standoff? Did you like that attention? It was the closest thing that you could get back to fighting in a sold-out arena?
In a way, but, like, you're following my logic, like, too far. Like, you're like, okay. I didn't think it that far deep through, but – you know, I was passionate about like the use of force that was wrong, and I felt a little political bent to the whole thing, because I feel like I don't want America to be a military dictatorship, and I don't want it to be like some kind of corporate warscape, you know, where each individual, you know, militia. The Walmart militia takes out the Starbucks militia. You know, I don't want that to happen in America. I don't think that's what the founding fathers had in mind. And I don't think that it's fair to the populace. So I guess I was making a misinformed statement about it.
I remember seeing you were featured on HBO's Real Sports. They had a segment on.
For which I won an Emmy?
No, well, they had a segment about domestic violence in MMA, and Jason, I have to be honest, like
the whole editing scene, monster ruined my life worse. I know. They edited it to make it look like I beat the shit out of Christy Mack. That is not true.
No, you did not. That was War Machine, John Copenhaver, but it did seem very tense with the reporter, but also the surroundings in which the interview happened seemed like you guys were. Where was that? And that was it was scary to see you in that setting, because it seemed like you weren't living a very healthy life.
No, I just wanted to show the world how scary my life was. Like that was the reality of my life at that time. Scary. Weird girls like hiding in the bushes, like just negative. Like I did everything wrong to see how to do stuff right. I always learn the hard way. If you're gonna be dumb, you gotta be tough.
What was, in your opinion, like, what was the lowest point? What was rock bottom?
This is it right here, bud. I mean,
come on.
What am I doing? Coming back groveling to Errol Hawani. I'm sorry that I knocked your toys over 20 years ago.
No, it's not that.
This is the lowest point.
Can't be. This is really the lowest
maybe point. This is my highest point. You ever think about that? Maybe after this, it's all downhill, bro. I'm just fucking laying in the gutter, waiting for somebody to kick me down.
Do you remember how many times you were arrested?
I don't know. Like 1,000?
And you went to jails for
I was in like the famous section of the jail. Like with the dude who cut somebody's wiener off. another like schizophrenic that like murdered his whole family, another guy who shot everybody at the party, another guy who murdered his wife because she's cheating on him, another guy who like shot a little kid because he's a gang member and he had a shootout with another guy.
While you're in jail, do they know who you are?
Pretty horrible. Yeah, everybody knows me. Yeah, I was running workouts in there. Like, it's just, you know, I just adapted.
What was it like? Like, what was life like for you there?
Like a box, small box. You know, just an ice box that you sit in. Makes a damn annoying sound all day. The lights never turn off. Okay, they wake you up every 30 minutes to bang on the door, check if you're alive. I don't know how Jeffrey Epstein got away with it.
And how long, the longest time, was it a year that you spent there?
Yeah, more. Yeah.
2 years?
Less, but in there.
Okay. Was there ever a point where you felt like you couldn't take it anymore?
No.
You knew eventually you'd get out?
No. But I knew that, like, today is a new day. Time to do something. You know, I was very disciplined for 20 years of my fighting career. I think I can be disciplined enough to pretend that I'm on a spaceship flying through Earth, you know, flying across the galaxy and do push-ups, pull-ups, squats, shadow box for 30 minutes, watch Wendy Williams' stupid conversations. You know what I mean? Every once in a while, I'll get lucky, watch Ellen do a little dance, you know, and then go run on the yard, you know, for an hour straight. Yeah, it was like Spartan lifestyle, read books. You know, I read like 500 some odd books in there for sure. And some of them weren't even comic books.
Mm. And did you live alone?
Yeah, I was like in segregation, like administrative segregation where you have to be like in a cell by yourself, which I mean, I guess that's like the Hilton.
What was the food like?
Yeah, it was food. I mean, sort of. It wasn't food in what you would call food or any like civilized human, but they did all right. You know what I mean? Nice Thanksgiving, you know, nice Christmas. The New Year's cookies were off the chain.
So the last time you were released from jail was in 2019, was last year.
Yeah.
Was it July or September of 2019?
Yes, July, yeah.
July. And then you emerged on social media in September. You had not posted anything for around 2 years. And the message was that was the first time where I was like, wow, you're starting to sound like the old Jason Miller that I met many moons ago. I just want to read one quick thing that you wrote there because it stuck with me. You said, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize to everyone that I negatively affected during this dark time, including friends, family, law enforcement, the cat.
I was talking about you.
Whom I have abandoned for far too long. I'm sorry. Are you apologetic? Like, do you?
Yeah, bro. Listen, I was kind of a black eye in the sport for a while because, like, I just went turned it up so extreme. Like, I just went to another place with all my thoughts and actions. And man, that's no way to live. Like, there's no way to keep friends. There's no way to like build an empire. Like, yeah, do that if you're just spitting hot fire at everybody all the time, you know, and just going outside of humankind to accomplish something. That's not, there's no way to do that. The new Mayhem, he's a likable bastard.
What was the turning point?
Well, I sat in that box for a long time, and I'll say this is that I finally had some like post incarceration treatment. You know what I mean? Like a therapy and like to figure out why we went this dark path before. And you know, since I've done that, I feel like a new person. And it's funny that you read that because even from that time, because I was really traumatized. Just the reality is that you come out of a box for a year and you're, you know, different now, like, and the world has moved on in this year, and it's like overwhelming to adapt to. And I see why recidivism rates are so high, because you have no guidance usually. And finally, you know, I was lucky enough to get a good judge, and the judge figured out that, hey, look, this guy's having a problem. He needs some type of treatment when he gets out of here. But, you know, he made me sit there for a long time. And once you reassess and you have this quiet to do it in, you know, moments of quiet, you like reassess the complete way that you've looked at the world. I don't recommend it for anybody, but if you're brave enough, you can do it.
Did someone in particular help you? Like, were you assigned a guidance counselor or a psychiatrist?
The therapist there was very like
in jail.
She's pretty educated, like very intelligent person. Like, you could tell that, like, whatever field manual she's reading from. And on top of that, I suppose that the other people that she talked to throughout the day, oh man, they have a whole different jacket, you know, they have a whole different, in my section, they have a whole different list of crimes, you know, serious ones. So I think that was part of the reason it was easier for her to get through to me.
When you were in your prime, were you taking any kind of medication? Like, did you know that you had any kind of mental illness?
Yeah, well, of course I got ADHD. Come on. How many times have I spun off? But, the testing, you weren't allowed to take anything for that. So, you know, I went without, because if it's not certified by the drug testing agency, you know, I would just like be delirious sometimes, like, you know, like not all the way focused.
Are you taking anything for that now?
Yeah. So they got me on a regular med schedule, and like, you know, this is part of my life.
Do you feel better? You taking it?
Yeah, definitely. I like feel more loosened, like clear, and can focus better for sure. You know, that's science.
Are you diligent about taking the medication?
Yeah. That's the common thing I hear, is that people don't, they go off, and then, you know, I know this. I feel like anybody who's had any touch of mental anything, you know, can identify.
Did you feel at any point like MMA turned on you? Like, did you feel like you gave MMA a lot?
For sure.
Resentment towards it?
For sure. Of course. Yeah. I was popped off at everybody. But, you know, like, because everybody understands now that, you know, I'm a legend in the sport, but at the time I was just some angry guy who just lost the fight, and the crowd like just sees what your latest fight is. You know, they just only remember what just happened recently. So, you know, they turn on me. I said, no, I'm turning on you. And that's why I gave the jerk interview to the HBO guy, because I was mad about the whole situation that I could just, you know, get dumped off like that. That's, you know, that's like a hard reality to learn, you know? And, do I regret some of it? Oh yeah, for sure. But, you know, it's in the past, and all I can do is make me the best me.
Are you still mad at the sport? Like, do you still harbor
Nah, totally not. No, I gave that up. I gave that up like a long time ago, you know, cause I had other stuff to worry about, you know. In the meantime, even though I did get in trouble a lot, and like I was like, you know, hustling this, hustling that, you know, business. You know, I still coach guys throughout this crazy period. So a lot of people have wild stories about me holding pads or doing something, you know, off color. But, it's all like, you know, smiling stories these days.
A couple of times you were facing like 20 years in prison, and you always kind of, you know, I don't want to say got lucky, but you got
not lucky, nothing, bro. No, look, that's part of the system there, Ariel. I'm sure you're not privy to where, look, they stack the charges against you. So, you know, every little thing you do, that's another year. Oh, it's an enhancement. You know, the California law is that way. I bet that like now they can bargain because they got, this is a 20-year crime for escaping the cops for a minute and then getting caught and then escaping them again and got caught again. That's like eight felonies right there or something. You know what I mean? An incident that you and I, as MMA fans, would look at as, oh, that was a nice scramble. That's eight felonies.
I'm just curious, when you were facing these, you know, multiple years in prison, like, were you scared? Were you nervous?
Yeah, but no. Like, I had that reality. It's the same as a fight, right? If you lose a fight, it would be terrible. But you have to, like, make sure that you know how to deal with it. And I just figured I'll deal with it when it gets here, you know, same as a fight. And, you know, of course it affects you. But, yeah, I really think the MMA has turned the rest of my stressors down.
In the midst of all this, back in 2016, you did take one more fight. You had one other fight outside of the CB Dolloway fight, and you showed up 24 pounds overweight.
28 pounds overweight.
28 pounds overweight for a middleweight title.
It was in my contract. I just paid the money.
What was going on there? I mean, did you just not?
I just wanted to have fun. Never been to Italy. You know what I mean? I've been to Poland and Russia and Japan and Brazil and Fight Island, but I had never been to Italy, and I just wanted to see a couple things over there.
You don't have any aspirations of fighting ever again, right?
I don't know, man. All my students are telling me that, oh my goodness, that I'm just like world class right now. So, I mean, I don't know. What weight is Nagano?
Ngannou, the heavyweight.
Nah, Nagano. Japanese guy, different guy.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm just kidding, bud. I'm just kidding. I was talking about Nagano.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not fighting that guy. Weigh? I'm not fighting that guy. Like 275 pounds.
Okay. What do you miss most about being an active fighter?
Man, well, the simplicity, where you just have to think about what's in front of you. You know, like, I get that in training, you know, but it's different. It's being selfless and, as a coach versus being selfish as a fighter, because you kind of just have to like work on your whole game all by yourself. Like, you know, your coaches are helping you, obviously, but really it comes down to what efforts you put in, what work you put in.
When were you your happiest as a fighter? Like, what was the high point of your career in your opinion?
I think maybe when I kicked Jacare in the face and like sprayed blood all over the Japanese fans. I think that was the best time. Yeah. Why? I'm all covered in blood.
You just enjoyed that.
The referee is telling me, no, no fucker, no fucker. Cause I'm telling him, fuck you. Yeah. It was like, you said happiest. Oh, right now, bud.
Maybe my favorite MMA photo of all time involves you. And it was taken by the great Esther Lin.
Esther?
Yes.
Esther.
It was after you submitted Kazushi Sakuraba in September of 2010, and you were bowing over him, and there's a light above. It's almost like his soul.
Man, life. God
bless him.
That was
a big deal for you, right? That was a big deal for
God,
you.
God, that was like the, you know, that's just one of those things where, like, fine art intersects with pop culture sort of thing, you know, because the skill that it took to like make this perfect shot was just, I don't know. She's just magic, that Esther.
But for you, that was a big deal to fight a Japanese legend in Japan, Sakuraba, one of the all
time. And that one specifically, because if you don't remember, like a million years before that, you know, choked out Rampage, and I wasn't Rampage's friend yet, but right after that fight, I literally watched that fight, and then I sparred with Rampage like a week later, like in California, and we started being buddies because of, you know, that first training camp with Tito Ortiz up in Big Bear. And we all like, it was just a legendary time to be a fighter. We didn't even call it MMA back then, you know? And years later, when I had the opportunity to fight, it's like, Rob, I said, definitely. Oh my goodness. I'm going to get him back for Rampage. But also, I was so, like, inspired by that man how creative his grappling was, how he would scramble and, you know what I mean? And how he beat all the Gracies, you know, just like, just gutted it out, you know? To me, all that was really inspiring as a fighter. So, you know, the night I beat him, I was very like, thankful, blessed, so blessed.
Do you still watch MMA?
Yeah. I jumped back in like full feet in the past, like, I don't know, 5 months. I'm pretty stoked about a lot. I don't have my favorites yet, but I'm pretty stoked about the sport. I just got back into it. So I'm a new fan too, everybody.
Hmm. So you know when I mean? You like, when you were in jail, were you watching it or are you totally?
Yeah, no, okay. They had a couple of free ones on there, didn't they? While I was inside and we did watch them and, you know, and then whenever a big show, big pay-per-view, all the guards would ask me what's my picks and then they would bet.
No way.
Based on, I'm like, man, this is a damn underground economy right here. Yeah. And then, I won a pack of ramen noodles off of, Tito Ortiz versus Chuck Liddell.
The one recently, the last one?
Yes.
But isn't that like for you, was that wild? Like here you are watching, talking about this and you were there, you were fighting at MGM Grand, you were fighting at Saitama.
Yeah, but I made like terrible decisions and you know, society won't stand for it. I don't blame them. You know, I was making terrible decisions. Yeah. You know, I heard about, George versus, Mike Bisman and then, inside, I was in a dungeon at that point. A dungeon. They had me in a dungeon, Errol, like a 1960s all day in a like 6 foot box. Yeah, because I was like, I don't know, a jerk to somebody in the, somewhere. And they housed me in this like, oh my goodness, just a nightmarish place. You know, you'd think the Count of Monte Cristo was in the basement.
Wow. For how long?
Man, I was there for a while. And then they moved me to a worse basement. So it was months and months and months, bro. 6 months. Something. Yeah, just bars through the, you know, like old school bars. A dungeon.
So like solitary confinement?
No, it's segregation, but like you could reach out of the bars and like hand each other stuff. It was like a different kind of segregation. It wasn't like, I wasn't in like the X-Men jail, which I would later go to where it's like a plexiglass wall. I was in like, man, sewer. I don't know if it, I don't know what it was, but it was a very dangerous place.
But Jason, in all honesty, like for someone who has some kind of mental illness to be stuck like that, that's dangerous, right?
This is America.
But how did you overcome that? How did you get through that? Like what were you thinking about? What were you doing?
Yeah, you know, I guess just different like coping mechanisms that you deal with. You know, exercise is a good one. I read and studied a lot. That was the thing that I got angry and said, I'm going to come out of here so much smarter that it'll be worth it. Mm. And maybe I did, maybe I didn't. The jury's still out. But I do know a lot of factoids these days and, you know, a lot about Mongolian Empire, definitely so Mongolians. And
What did you study?
Well, you know, I learned about China through one called the Thousand Year Marathon. I remember this one was like kind of instrumental because I didn't ever look at China as anything but, you know, where my cup is produced. But, yeah, I got more into the geopolitics of the situation and I understand what they're doing right, what we're doing wrong and what we're doing wrong and they're doing right.
Right. And so you just read a lot and how did you get these books? There's a library there?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I had a lot of support out there from people that, you know, they know who they are and, I appreciate it so much, man. It was amazing because without that, my brain would have turned to mush, you know, because there's not much going on in there. Like, it was crazy, man. I got so many stories though of all those murderers I named you. I don't know why I was over there in that section, but that was the high profile section. And man, there was some interesting characters there, Errol Hawani. I'll tell you that much. But those books saved my life. I would just bear. Oh man, I even like can read Spanish now. Oh, good Lord. Yeah. I'm not very good at speaking it, but I can understand it now. Like, it's pretty, that's a pretty useful skill here in California.
Because you're a pro fighter, did anyone ever try to test you?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Went all right. Went fine.
Okay. Did that happen a lot?
Nah, not after that.
Okay. Not something you want to talk about?
No, it's fine. No.
Okay. Interestingly enough, last Friday was the 10-year anniversary of the Nashville Brawl on CBS. Isn't that crazy?
Awesome! Oh, my God. 10 years ago. Yo, that was a blast. I didn't know what all the hubbub was about. I didn't even know why everyone was angry at me. I was like, hey, man, I thought we're going to do this rematch. And, oh, okay, guess not.
Is that the biggest regret of your career, that you never got the Diaz fight? Not the Brawl, that you didn't get the Nick Diaz fight.
Oh, yeah, that's garbage. Diaz, and you know what I mean? Here's the thing, though. I think we're both, like, getting tired of this. But I think that he's got, like, a young dude that could fight my young dude. Mm. I feel like that would be hot. And we're in talks. Somebody's in talks with them right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys have you talked to him?
I feel like that would be a nice one to, like, let's fire back up the rivalry. You know what I mean? Years later, 10 years later, let's fire it back up, Nick Diaz. You got any guys? What's up?
Have you ever talked to him recently?
No, I haven't talked in a long time. I got wild with them at a damn bar, though. I think we buried the hatchet, but I'm ready to dig it back up. I'm ready to dig it back up. I feel like we could have some good shows, this guy. If I know about those dudes up there, they're training hard all the time.
Are you still close with any of your friends, MMA fighter friends from back in the day? Or do you have new friends around you now?
Yeah, Matt Horwitz is somewhere around here. I don't know where. He'll show back up sometime. But, a lot of the newer guys came in. So I've been friends with, like, the next generation, you know. I got somebody out there at Conor McGregor's team who's training right now. You know, it's like a new wave, you know, of friends in MMA. But, yeah, I feel friendly with most anybody. I don't think I have beef personally with anybody. Hmm. Maybe like one or two.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Okay, you're just saying it could be one or two people.
Could be, yeah. Maybe I'm don't know who I'm talking to.
Right.
Depends. It depends. But I'm pretty sure everybody's pretty cool with Mayhem.
What about your family? Are you still in contact with them?
Yeah. Oh, okay. My God, too much sometimes. My mom is sending me so much beautiful little paintings that she done. Like, oh, my God, Mom, enough of these paintings, but okay, I love you. Okay, I love this one. Okay, I love this one even more. Never mind. Keep sending the paintings. Never mind.
By the way, who gave you the Mayhem nickname?
Phil Baroni.
The man.
Stuck me with that. Yeah, the NYBA, who's still out there, like, kicking ass. And,
well, what were the circumstances?
Was that? I think we were watching RoboCop. I could be wrong. I don't remember what movie it was. But I had just launched into one of my tirades about this, that, or the other. You know how I'm pretty good at complaining. And he just, like, flopped over on the couch after training. He was like, this guy's fucking Mayhem. And I was like, huh? And that was that. You know.
I actually just saw Phil in Albuquerque. Awesome. He was staying at the Jackson Wink gym, trying to figure things out. So good to hear that he was the one that gave you. I don't know if I ever knew that story. Now, so you have had situations in the past where you've come out and you've apologized and you said that you're back on track. Why is now different? You're good, dude, to go now.
I don't know if I ever apologized. Nah, I didn't.
So what's different now?
Man, I feel great. MayhemMartialArts.com is taking off. Everything's falling into place like this late. And it's been a wild ride. You know, I'm not going to lie. And you just alluded to it by reading my rap sheet to America. But I'll tell you this, is that man, I never really looked at older dudes with respect. And now I have such a deep respect for anybody, even 6 months older than me, because like, it just takes time to learn things and process and learn how to deal with yourself. And I don't know, I'm on a winning track right now. You know, I just feel honored. Like, I just feel honored to be Mayhem.
Wow, that's amazing. I have to say, you know, like I said at the top, I really didn't think we'd ever talk again. And this has warmed my heart. I thought we would just, you know, go in separate directions. Honestly, I thought you'd either be maybe in jail and the worst of all, maybe not here, maybe not living, because it was getting scary. I'm sorry
to everybody. Like, I apologize to everybody. I did. I went too far. I went too far all the time. And I'm sorry for that, Errol Winey. I hope we stay in contact, you know, touch base, especially when this thing lets up off of us, right? So that we can break down the next big fight and see who the hell is going to win.
Can you guarantee now that you will stay out of trouble, that you will not be arrested again? No incidents?
Thanks, bud. I appreciate your concern. Yeah, I'll be all right.
Okay.
I mean, I can't promise nothing.
Well, I just...
No, but yeah, I feel great, man. Everything is going good.
I'm happy to hear that. Jason, good to talk to you again, my friend. I wish you the
God
best.
Bless you, brother.
MayhemMartialArts.com
where
people can see more of what you're doing. You're back on social media, back tweeting, back doing your thing, and I hope that you're able to develop the next young crop of fighters and remind people about, you know, what made you so special as a fighter. Honestly, it's great to talk to you. It's great to see you again, and I really appreciate you doing this, and thanks for bearing with me as we kind of rehash some not so...
Hey, man, I appreciate that. I'm just... Look, as soon as I could stop talking about the bad part of my life,
I hear you.
So much better.
I hear you. Thanks,
Jason. All right, Errol. Love you, man.
All right. Once again, thank you very much to Jason Miller. Never thought I'd talk to him again, and it was nice to reconnect. And I feel from that conversation, hour or so long, I feel like he is in a better place. It sounds to me like we're starting to see the reemergence of the old Jason Miller. I pray that that is the case and that he no longer finds himself in trouble and that he gets the help that he needs. He stays on that, that regimen of taking his medication, because I can't stress this enough. In his prime, around 11 or so years ago, he was a true talent and he did a lot for the sport of MMA, and it's great to see that he's trying to give back now and, training fighters. So we wish him the best, and I really appreciate him spending some time with me today. I enjoyed that. All right. Now time for everyone's favorite segment of the week, presented by our good friends over at Modelo, setting the gold standard for authentic Mexican beer since 1925. Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit. It's time now for this.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Mayhem Miller. I enjoyed learning a lot about him today, Errol. Good interview.
True or false? Prior to today, you had no idea who Mayhem Miller was.
Absolutely no idea. I mean, most of the time that you tell me, you get in touch with me the day before the show, hey, this is what I want to have on, most of the time I have to do a quick Google search to figure out who the heck you're talking about.
And when you started to do your research about him, what did you think?
Well, the first thing that came up was your interview with him that you referenced many times throughout the show, and me being friends with you, I was quite offended by what happened and didn't quite understand what happened. So I'm still very new to this combat sports world of everyone playing characters and people sticking to characters, sometimes never leaving their characters. And so I was very offended by it, and I felt bad 10 years after the fact for you.
To the point where you almost felt like, why are you having this guy on, right?
Yeah, I was like, why does he want to have him on? Like, I felt that you were so disrespected in that moment, and I, you know, was kind of in awe of you that you wanted to go talk to him again after that. I mean, he went to your set in New York and kind of like, yeah, he climbed on your desk. He's moving around equipment. He's disrespecting everyone, whether you're playing a character or not. I think that's kind of rude. So I was offended.
Well, I appreciate that. But in the end, I hope you enjoyed it and learned a little bit about one of the OGs of the fight game, as we like to say. And I am genuinely happy to hear that he's okay, that he's in a better place. And I hope that that remains.
I do, too. So getting to this week's tip. So as we are all learning throughout this quarantine, I think minimalists are kind of well braced for this life, because so many people are figuring out what is essential, what are essential items. Meanwhile, minimalists, we kind of know the whole time. So that's why I want to tie this into like minimalist fitness routines where you can't get to a gym, where you don't have access to all the equipment, the treadmills or the dumbbells or the lat pull down machines. I've kind of been bracing for this like my whole life because I'm a great home workout guy. So obviously, of course, you know, you can go out. I know Ariel, I know you like to go for runs. You got this whole Helwani boxing thing going on, which I wouldn't really consider that a workout. You like to say that you're, you know, some hero for getting people active. I think you're, it's kind of, not very exercise heavy.
Wow. Wait, first of all,
too much cardio.
I
call
myself a hero. I've never called myself a hero. I'm just trying to get people, you know, moving a little bit. I mean, what's better, that or, you know, being on the couch playing video games?
Oh, it's definitely. Listen, it's definitely better than playing video games, but it's no calorie shredder like real shadow boxing, shadow kickboxing.
This is an elitist approach on your part.
This is a great staple of working out at home. So what I suggest, my favorite minimalist workout is if you're getting home, is put a timer on 18 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever you're feeling, whatever you've got in the tank. And so a great minimalist routine involving no equipment, just your body. It's amazing what you can do with the body. So say you do an upper body, say it's push-ups or dips. You can be very resourceful in your home. Maybe you have a little table that you can do some dips on, or, you know, you need a weight. Maybe you have a brick in your backyard, a cinder block in your backyard. I myself have used a cast iron pan as a weight in the past. So say you do an upper body workout, a lower body workout, maybe some squats, maybe some lunges, you know, maybe with a household item or not, and then maybe some core work or some kickboxing or whatever. And maybe you do X amount of reps. You say, I'm going to do this amount of reps. And so what you do your upper body, lower body, core, your 3 to 4 workouts in rapid succession in the amount of reps that you're going to do. Then you take a 30-second break in between your set of all those workouts and then get back at it. And you just do that for your allotted time, your 18, 20, 25, 30 minutes. That's my favorite at-home workout. But of course, there's many other things you can do without equipment, without gyms. And I think people are going to come out of this quarantine realizing that this is a big win for minimalism, that people are learning that maybe you don't need all these fancy bells and whistles to be fit or all these fancy bells and whistles to do other things in your life.
Well, despite your unnecessary shot at me, I do agree. I do think that a lot of people are realizing in all facets, not just working out, like little things like, oh, you know what? Maybe I can cut my hair and save, you know, $30 every time. I'm not trying to take any, you know, business away from barbers, but I do think people are reinventing the way they look at their lives and changing up certain things. So that's very interesting. Also, speaking of minimalism, couldn't help but notice I was scrolling through Twitter recently, and I stumbled upon your on and off again Twitter feed, and you happened to give a shout out to a podcast, which I think is great, and I'd like for you to give them a shout out right now. But what was interesting was you said, this is the best podcast that I've heard in quite some time. And I thought, well, that's funny, because here's a podcast producer of mine, like my podcast producer, saying this is the best podcast he's heard in quite some time. I figure he listens to my podcast. Felt like a bit of a shot. Am I wrong? Am I wrong for feeling that way?
No, it was no shot at you. I will just say that on my own time, on my own podcast listening time, and of course I listen to all your shows, yes, but more so not for you, but just to make sure that I didn't mess anything up.
Right.
So I listen on my own time to shows like this one in particular. This was a Jamie Kilstein's podcast. First time I listened to his podcast. He's a pretty well-known comedian, I gather.
By the way, and, big MMA fan.
Yes, he is. He was on Joe Rogan's show, so I found that out about him. So big MMA guy, but he had on his most recent podcast, Ryan Nicodemus, who I referenced on the show last week. He is a famous online minimalist, and he's one of my inspirations for minimalism. And so I wanted to hear what he had to talk about. And the conversation that Ryan and Jamie had was an amazing conversation.
Hmm. I mean, the best podcast you've heard in quite some time. I mean, maybe the Mayhem one rivals that, or is different, right? Different.
It does not, but I will say that one of your, it is not this specific show, but your podcast episode, your interview that you did with Dan Le Batard on South Beach Sessions, that is one of maybe like 5 podcasts in my life that I've listened to multiple times. Like an episode I've listened to multiple times. I've listened to that twice to try to get to know your story and why you are the way you are.
Wow. Would you say that that's when you realize, you know what, here I am getting to work with this guy. I should really be appreciative of this. I mean, this is a special talent who's been through a lot and has seen a lot and experienced a lot. Is that something that went through your mind?
Sure. Let's go with that.
Okay. All right, I'll take that. I mean, after multiple insights, yeah, I'm very vulnerable during this time. You know, I'm just trying to help people out with my Helwani boxing gear, which, by the way, you can get on liboart.com. The brother of Dan Le Batard. Did you know that Dan Le Batard's brother is a great artist? And he designed that shirt for me, and all the proceeds are going to Feeding America. So go to liboart.com right now to purchase that. 100% of the proceeds. Not making a dime off of any of this, Troy. So I'm trying to do good for others, as you have taught me to do. And,
yes, sir.
You know, I feel like together we are making a difference on this planet.
I want to throw in here some more good words here. A 5-star review, and it is titled, I don't know who it's from. He or she did not leave a name, but it's called Minimalist Review of the Week.
Wow.
It says, Ariel, good talker. Interview skills, good questions. Lame boxing string, but still good. And as for TST, audio quality good. Good tips, no intro 5,000 times. I think that's a shot at corporate Jake.
Yes.
And he's not a mensch, but still good. The show, 9 out of 10. 10 out of 10 with rice. I don't know what that means, but thank you for your minimalist review of the week. It's appreciated.
Did you write that?
I did not, but I would like to know who did.
Yeah. Well done. I appreciate that. I appreciate all the reviews, and I urge you all, good or bad, to leave us a review. Obviously appreciate the good ones a little more. Leave us a 5-star review, do your thing, download all that stuff and more. And, we hope that you are enjoying the content that we are putting out during this quote unquote downtime. By the time the UFC returns, if in fact they do return on May 9th, and of course the card took a bit of a hit earlier this week with Amanda Nunes pulling out, it will be almost 2 months, a large break for the UFC, but not large if you look at other sports. And, hopefully everything is safe and sound and healthy. I think sometimes distance makes the heart grow fonder, and I think the break will prove to be a valuable one for the UFC if they can get back on track. So we shall see. Right now, hearing that the event will take place in Jacksonville, Florida. So we'll see if they can pull it off. For now, though, I think we're out of time, TST.
Hello?
Are you cool with that? You cool with me saying goodbye? TST may have frozen up on my screen here, but I think I'll just keep going. Why the heck not? All right, we're out of time. Thank you very much to all of you for listening. Thank you very much to all of you for tuning in, downloading, rating, subscribing, reviewing, all that stuff and more. And most importantly, thank you very much to Jason Mayhem Miller. I sincerely hope that he's able to get his life back on track and that he's in a better place. And I really appreciate him talking to me today. I hope you enjoyed that as well. Also, thank you very much to Modelo for supporting us. Please do support them as well. We love our friends over at Modelo. All right, we're out of time. Again, much love to all of you. Have a great rest of your week. I'll talk to you soon.